the host of the NFL Matchup Show, the author of Philly Special, Hall of Fame elector, Sal Palantonio. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, Pat and Joe. Hope you had a nice Christmas. Happy New Year to you and your family and the listeners of this great program this week in pro football. Can't believe we're on the doorstep of Wild Card Weekend, baby. Come on. It's unbelievable.
It did. It flew by, as it always does, Sal. But can we start with this? I know we got, obviously, we got this game to talk about, but just for a second, because, you know, sure, you and I, you have such a great history in the game. A lot of talk about Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees not making this top 10 quarterback list as selected by that blue ribbon panel. Would you have knocked anybody out of that top 10 to include them?
Well, it's tough, right? It really is tough. Drew Brees definitely belongs in there, without a doubt. Top 10 all time. I do believe. I understand that a lot of his stats are as a result of his home field advantage, the way they play there. But the numbers are the numbers. And so you have to go Drew Brees and Peyton Manning. You certainly have to consider Dan Marino. But maybe you take Marino out and you put Drew Brees.
But Joe suggested Brett Favre. I mean, Favre is all over the record book and is undeniable. But yes. I mean, it's his more of a longevity prize than anything.
I include Brett Favre. You know, I once wrote a book with Stephen Frank called The Most Overrated and Underrated Players in NFL History, and I had Favre as the second most overrated quarterback because of his postseason performance and the high number of interceptions that he threw.
Right.
But that... You know, that's only because people were counting him as one of the top two or three all time.
Right.
I think he's top 10 all time, Brett Favre. No question in my mind.
All right.
But Brees has to be on the list, and I think you take Marino out. I mean, Brees won a Super Bowl, Marino did not.
Boy, that's a close call. It's a close call for me. You know, I'm such a Dan Marino fan. I just thought he was a quintessential quarterback. But
there's no question. But we're talking about top 10 all time, obviously.
Yeah.
But Pat, Bart Starr did not make the list, right?
Yeah. Yep. No, he did not.
No, Bart Starr would make the list for me. See, I think Bart Starr is top 10 all time. He was the quarterback of the 60s. To me, he's got to be in. Maybe you take Otto Graham out.
Yeah. There's a lot of recency bias in it, you know, Rodgers and Brees, but I understand.
There's no way Rodgers should be in the top 10 all time.
Right.
Forget
right.
it.
Yeah. All right, well, that's good. I appreciate that input very much, Sal. Let's get back now to a more local situation. That is, we head into the final.
Oh, we got a local situation, Mr.
We have
Pat.
A local developing situation.
We got a big idol, Bill Pito, situation in this game, right?
All right. So my first question to you about this game is, how scary do you see this game? And the Giants' offense is looking very potent right now. Their defense is terrible. But, I mean, how uncomfortable are you with Philadelphia going up there to win this game tomorrow?
I would say uncomfortable. Not super uncomfortable, but definitely uncomfortable. The head coach is clearly uncomfortable. He has talked every single day to the football team about making sure that alignment and assignment football is played in this game, because the youth and speed that has developed quite quickly with the Giants is pretty good. And he also knows that he's really depleted on defense. Jalen Mills has a bad ankle. If you're expecting Rasul Douglas to step in and play, you know, for Ronald Darby, I don't see that happening. I mean, to me, this is a game where the following players need to play well. Avante Maddox, Sidney Jones, and then safeties McCloud, Jenkins, and I really like Marcus Epps. I think he has developed quite quickly. If you look at him on film, Schwartz is very, very happy with him blitzing up the A-gap. And having Marcus Epps, I be key, because Daniel Jones can run with the ball. I want to see Epps on the field more than McCloud. Let me repeat that. Marcus Epps, with his speed, needs to be on the field more than McCloud.
Wow. So one of the things that Rodney McCloud actually has played a role in, Sal, that we've been talking about a lot, is the Eagles' ability to shut down premier backs, which is, you know, bell cow backs this season. Ezekiel Elliott had a good game against
back. Them. Not this guy. This guy's too fast and bounces outside too quickly, and McCloud won't be able to catch up to him.
Is there any chance, Sal, that they are able to shut down Barkley with Epps in the mix? Is there an idea that they'll be able to do that?
Yes. This is a gang tackling game, and it's alignment and assignment football. Make sure that Barkley doesn't get outside the tackle box. Make sure you have the edges covered, corral, and gang tackle. That can happen. I mean, Barkley's going to get 100. You don't want him getting 200.
All right. I mean, my theory on this game, guys, is that, you know, it's a down-the-middle game. And the down-the-middle for the Eagles happens to correspond to their three most notable players, which is Carson Wentz. And then on the defensive side, it's Malcolm Jenkins in the middle of the secondary, and it's Fletcher Cox in the middle of the defensive line. I think those three guys got to win this game.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Pat. I agree with you. You know, the middle of your team, just like in baseball, is key. That's why they're in the middle. I mean, you know, your defensive captain's got to be your defensive tackle and your safety, no question about it, or your middle linebacker. And for sure, at the quarterback position. Now, let's talk about the quarterback. What I have seen in his transformation, nothing short of remarkable, considering that he's had so many different moving parts. And those moving parts have helped him, and the coaching staff has helped him, and he has helped them. Clearly, they have benefited from the speed and agility and quickness and ability to get in and out of breaks of Boston Scott and Greg Ward. Those guys replacing Aguilar and Alshon Jeffrey and Jordan Howard have been a big, big, important addition. Those guys are open, and Miles Sanders. I haven't even mentioned Miles Sanders, but the three of them, Ward, Scott, and Sanders, are open, and he is getting the ball to them. He does not have to hold on to the ball and wait for Alshon Jeffrey to get open or wait for Aguilar to get open. And so they're really developing quickly, and Doug Peterson has done truly a remarkable job of incorporating those players into this offense rather quickly. And here's the number that counts the most of all the numbers that anybody is going to throw at you this weekend. When Carson Wentz does not turn the ball over, the Eagles are 17-3 in his career, 6-1 this season. If he doesn't turn the ball over, the Eagles win the game. That's as simple as it gets.
And this is a team, Joe, that, as I was talking to you earlier, they don't force turnovers, minus 15.
Yeah, the Giants don't do that a whole lot. Sal, we've found understanding that the Eagles can still make the postseason in the event that they lose this game. But it is kind of a backs against your wall, the wall situation. What is it in the DNA of this team that you've seen that allows them to respond so well in situations like this?
I think you have to take a case-by-case basis. I think all three of these seasons have been different. Obviously, the Super Bowl season was an outlier in many respects, and you can't compare it to last year, and you can't compare it to this year, and you can't compare this year to last. As I just stated, Joe, the difference this year has been Peterson and Wentz's adaptability to these younger players and vice versa. And what you're seeing with the up-tempo offense, Carson Wentz's ability to get the ball out quickly is a direct result of Ward and Boston Scott and Miles Sanders being open earlier in the down. He doesn't have to hold the ball. If he doesn't have to hold the ball, he can get rid of it. He can distribute it. I like some guy who won a Super Bowl here, Nick Foles. So that is what has happened with this team. The DNA is in the schematics and the responsiveness and adaptability of the players and the coaches. And it all comes from Doug. I've been around Doug since the day he was hired. And I got to tell you, when Jeffrey Lurie stood up there and said that this guy's got the emotional intelligence to adapt in a way that he's never seen before, it's true. 4 years, I've watched it happen. For him to make the playoffs 3 out of the 4 years if they win tomorrow, considering no right tackle, missing all three starting wide receivers, missing your starting running back for most of the season, is, you know, obviously he won the Super Bowl. That's his best coaching job ever. But this is an incredible coaching job by Doug Peterson, and his ability to adapt, I think, I don't see how he's not in the Coach of the Year conversation.
All right, we're talking with Sal Powell, presented by First Bank. Sal, the host of the NFL Matchup Show. Sal, I can't help it. I got to bring it up here. Joey kind of alluded to it a second ago, and that is everybody's favorite team in America, the Dallas Cowboys. They came in last week, Sal, and played just such a terrible game. I just wanted to get your thoughts as they head into the same situation as Philadelphia tomorrow. They must win and hope for the Eagles to lose. What happened to that organization in 2019? And how drastic are the changes coming? I'm referring to both coach and quarterback in the offseason should the Eagles win tomorrow.
Well, that's a good question, Pat, and that's a long answer I could give you. But, you know, what's really interesting is after they steamrolled your Rams, we all thought that they were going to come in here.
Right.
And I rewatched the preamble from Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, and they all but picked the Eagles to lose that game, saying, oh, my gosh, the Cowboys just steamrolled the Rams. They have better talent. They're healthier. Poor Eagles, this, that, and the other thing. They went on and on about how the Eagles, you know, are such underdogs in the game. And then the Cowboys come in here, and you can spread all the blame all around, just like Jason Garrett said, because they had a chance to win the division title. It was on, as they say, their racket. They had three drops, giving them 28 in the NFL this year. That's second most to the Miami Dolphins. You don't want to be compared to the Miami Dolphins.
That's right.
They have 28. The Dolphins had 32 going into week 17. Secondarily, their quarterback was obviously not 100%. His ball was slow. It had no velocity. You had Eagles DBs hunting it down and knocking the ball down. Then he was high with it. Then when he was on target, guys dropped it. Jason Witten with a drop. Gallup with a drop. But the biggest problem was what? They got a $90 million running back, and right, they failed to give him the football.
Exactly correct. Inexplicable, really.
And I mean, you got to be joking me. What is that?
Right.
You come in here and you can see, anybody could see. I turned to my producer, Brian Franey, who's with me all the time. I said, do you see what I see? Do you see that Dak Prescott's ball has no velocity and guys are batting it down? That was in the first quarter. I said, do you see that? And as soon as that happened, it was pretty clear all the Eagles had to do was be in position because the ball was going to be behind, had no velocity. And when it got there, guys were like, oh, my God, it got here, and they dropped it. So how does a coaching staff of the Cowboys not see that and not give Elliott the football? So I'm going to guess. I'm going to take a wild guess. I'm going to guess that Pat Shurmur is not that stupid. And I'm going to guess that Pat Shurmur tomorrow is going to give Saquon Barkley the football, just feed it to him. I don't care what the down and distance is. I don't care what the score is. Absolutely give Barkley the ball and just hope that he breaks one here or there. And if he does, that could be the difference in the game.
Right. That's what we talked about earlier.
And Sal, the other game that kind of has some importance on the docket, and there are a couple, but the big one is San Francisco and Seattle is going to kind of determine in the event that the Eagles win the NFC East, who is coming to Philadelphia. What do you make of that matchup between the 49ers and the Seahawks?
Beast or bust.
That's pretty good.
That's the bottom line for the right Seattle there. Seahawks.
Beast,
they
got to
feed the beast and let him just rumble in the jungle up there.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you guys had me on last week, and I said Seattle had the easiest road because they had the Arizona Cardinals came in.
Right.
And boy, oh boy, Pat, what happened? I couldn't believe that. That may be one of the worst losses of the year by any team.
Yeah.
And now they have to beat San Francisco, and San Francisco's getting healthier. Go back to the overtime loss, Seattle over San Francisco in Santa Clara. Earlier in the year, George Kittle did not play in that game. He was hurt. They are a different team with George Kittle on the field.
Yep.
So that's why it's so important for Seattle to just do what it's always done, and that is run the ball and keep Jimmy the Gent off the football field.
Yeah. a lot to ask.
I sound like a broken record, don't I?
Yeah. But it's a lot to ask of a guy who hasn't picked up a football in 13 months or whatever it's been for Marshawn Lynch, and tell him, "Hey, go."
Yeah,
on this
but
game
he's a total freak of nature. That guy. Yeah. I mean, he is. I'm sure they worked him out a little bit. Just give him the ball, see what happens. At least there's a decoy to open things up for Russell Wilson, for sure.
One of the things I'm excited about, Sal, is that you can almost guarantee that there is no media availability whatsoever for Marshawn Lynch, because at this point he probably doesn't care if he gets fined for not showing up. So I'm looking forward to that.
So how about we do a little top five here, brought to you by our good friend Pat McConney at Gleason's Bar in Levittown, PA, right up the street from Truman High. Pat's recently took over Gleason's. He's just rolled out his South Philly style cheesesteak. So stop on by Gleason's this weekend for a slice, not chopped, to death ribeye on a South Philly baked roll. Grab an ice cold beer from one of 10 taps. Watch the birds on 6 brand new TVs. That's Gleason's Bar in Levittown, PA. Joey and I have already filled in this top five, Sal. So we're going to give you the microphone here. And I just want you to tell me, give me the top two seeds. Who's getting the byes in the AFC, and who's getting the byes in the NFC? So
AFC is easy. AFC is real easy. New England and Baltimore, for sure.
Right.
NFC is a lot harder, right? A lot harder. But I'm going to go with San Francisco and Green Bay.
That's it. Yeah. So we're unanimous in that. San Francisco wins tomorrow night, and I think that Green Bay has to do is to clinch the two seed is to beat Detroit. So they're going to do that. So I think that's how you ended up with it. And what shakes out there, Sal, is, you know, I was lamenting earlier in the show that the Minnesota Vikings even making it as a six seed because they're going to go to New Orleans. Under our scenario, Minnesota goes to New Orleans and gets completely waxed in that 3-6 game. And it's a shame, you know, with the Rams sitting there and the Cowboys sitting there, two teams that I think are better than Minnesota, but they didn't take care of their business.
I don't think Minnesota's getting waxed in that game. I don't see them getting waxed.
It all depends on the health of Dalvin Cook. They're a different team. They're a different team with Dalvin Cook's playing. Yeah, you know, at this time of year, end of December, beginning of January, you got to be able to do two things. You got to keep the other team off the field. That means you got to eat clock and play field position football. And then, you know, the obvious thing is you can't turn the ball over. That's it. Bottom line. If you do that, you should have enough talent to win. And I do believe the Eagles have enough talent to win the next two games. I really do. If Carson, I'm going to give it to you again. If Carson Wentz doesn't turn the ball over, this team is 17-3. 17-3. 17-3.
Sal, last
he doesn't
for
turn
me.
The ball over, they win the next two games.
Jordan Howard's been cleared for contact. What do you think we can expect his role to be, considering how well Boston Scott and Miles Sanders have played so far?
Minimal.
Think he's going to have that Ajayi kind of role?
I just think it's going to be minimal.
I gotcha.
All right, Sal, we appreciate you taking all this time, and we look forward. We still got a few weeks to go here. We still got 3 weeks to go after this, right up to the conference championship game, so we look forward to your input throughout. And have a good new year, all right?
All right, thanks, Pat.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.